What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are at the NATA Conference here in Houston 2017. My friend Jared Plummer is here with Daryl Conway. Daryl is a longtime friend of Jared, also one of the athletic directors of the sort there at Michigan, as Jared liked to say. So, Jared, again, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast again, and I appreciate you being willing to host these podcasts. So without much further ado, I thank Frio Hydration for having us here at this booth. And take it away, Jared.
Good deal. Thanks, Jeremy, as always. I want to start off by welcoming the next guest we got here. So Daryl Conway is a senior associate AD for, what is that, student health?
Student athlete health and welfare.
Okay. Everything changes. At first, it's just you're the head guy, and now you're like the senior associate AD. And I don't know what all the letters mean, but that's good. You're doing something right. But Daryl, before that, he was the what was your title at Maryland?
Assistant athletic director, director of sports medicine.
Okay, that's right. So he hired me as an intern athletic trainer at Maryland after I left graduate school. So I've known Daryl since I guess for 11 years now. But wanted to welcome Daryl. I thought he's kind of been a guy that's, when you go back and look at, and he would never know this, and I'm never going to say it again because I don't want your head to swell, but when I go back and look at mentors, he's certainly one I've got my list of guys whenever I have like a job opportunity or whatnot that I text, and it's Daryl, it's Mike Hanley at East Carolina, actually, honestly, those are usually the first two. And then depending on who, actually, I'll always send it to y'all two. And then I'll usually figure out who the third person is. But you're always the person who I'm like, what do you think? And I appreciate the fact that you're respectfully, incredibly blunt. And for what it's worth, I appreciate it. But I appreciate you you being on. How about this? What's a little bit about your backstory? Where'd you go to school and how'd you end up where you are?
Well, I started out at the University of Delaware. I was a student at University of Delaware.
Now, are you from Delaware?
I'm from Maryland.
Okay.
I'm from Beltsville, Maryland, which is right outside the Capitol Beltway, about 7 miles from Washington, D.C. Went to University of Delaware for undergrad. Had the opportunity when I was in undergrad for 3 years to work with the New York Jets as a summer intern. Okay. Got lucky my senior year. Pepper Burris left the New York Jets to go to Green Bay as a head athletic trainer at the Green Bay Packers, and Bob Reese and Joe Patton took a chance on a young kid from Delaware, hired me on in a full-time capacity with the Jets. So I worked there for 3 years, got caught up in some coaching changes at the Jets. The athletic trainers got caught up, and the baby got thrown out with the bathwater, basically. So I went back to the University of Delaware as assistant professor and assistant athletic trainer, working a range of Olympic sports, helped out with football a little bit, got the opportunity in 1998 to be the director of sports medicine, head athletic trainer at Morgan State University, HBCU in Baltimore, Maryland. Took that opportunity, was there for 2 years, had the opportunity at University of Northern Iowa as their director of sports medicine. It was basically a $25,000 raise and raising budget, raising personnel, took that opportunity. 2001, got the opportunity to go to University of Central Florida as their head athletic trainer. Jumped on that because I always wanted to live in Florida.
Why not? No
state income taxes, Orlando.
Yep, that's right.
Disney theme parks.
Mickey's right down the street.
Minimum of 70 degrees all year long.
That's right.
So jumped on that opportunity, and then in 2004, had the opportunity to move back to Maryland as a director of sports medicine at the University of Maryland. Was there for 9 years, had a great time, had an incredible staff of athletic trainers at the University of Maryland, worked with some incredible coaches there also. And then the Michigan opportunity presented itself in 2013. It was an opportunity a little bit to step away from the clinical setting on an everyday basis and move more into administration, a little bit more job security. Not on a coach's schedule. Make my own schedule. So, but also had the opportunity to build something at Michigan that they had never had before in terms of a student athlete health and welfare department that encompasses basically anything and everything that touches a student athlete.
So you've got sports medicine. Does that include?
I have athletic medicine. I have strength and conditioning. I have performance psychology, performance nutrition, performance science, and equipment operations all fall under.
Okay, what's performance science?
Performance science is kind of like, I guess you can call it sports science.
Okay.
It's the, you know. The
biomechanics and stuff like that?
Yeah,
like,
biomechanics, exercise phys, GPS,
yeah.
Data science, data analytics, performance analytics.
Now, does that partner with the university, like academic side?
Yeah. Yes, we have a huge partnership with all facets of the university, not just only athletics, but our School of Kinesiology.
Yeah.
We started a new thing at the University of Michigan 2 years ago called the Exercise and Sports Science Institute,
okay.
which is a collection of everything, every academic unit at the university.
All talking together,
working together on research. We started last year a pretty good collaboration with our School of Information
mm-hmm.
and our School of Data Science. So what we're building is hopefully to have a sports analytics major by next year and try to build it somewhat around what the historical athletic training education programs have been, where you have one or two students, athletic training students, that are assigned to every team, that work with every team.
Yeah.
What we're trying to build is have one or two or three analytics majors data science majors that are assigned to a team, so they'll be assigned to basketball for their entire career at Michigan, and they'll sit and work on the analytics with basketball. So we started it with basketball, soccer, and baseball this year.
Okay.
We've done a pretty good job with baseball from a sabermetrics analytics side, kind of the performance side of baseball. Basketball, we're doing a good job on the sports science side. Soccer, we're doing a good job on the sports science side.
I mean, in the end, it's utilizing your resources, and I'm sure Michigan. I don't mean financial. I mean just having the staff and the facilities and all that associated with it.
The university programs are key. I think it's like 170 some programs at the university. They rank in the top 17 of their respective programs. These kids have the expertise and the brain power to do things, analytics things, statistical things that would take us an hour or two.
Just
is a freshman level project for these kids that take them 10 minutes to figure out.
Everything, you're either getting better or getting worse, and no matter what profession or whatever it is, but obviously, I mean, you all know, I mean, it, you know, you look at the big Michigans and the Ohio States and the Texases and all the ones that just have these, you look at those as being kind of the beacons for so many things, and you look at what they're building and kind of, you know, what's the next thing coming out. Well, schools like that, you guys have to be the ones that kind of develop that, and because everybody else is kind of looking towards it, to be honest. But
But I'd say that every school has a mathematics department, every school has a kinesiology department, a statistics department, data science department.
But getting them all,
they have that expertise on campus. You just have to reach out to them and get them engaged in athletics, and you have the data.
Yeah,
they have the expertise.
You gotta work it together.
Yeah, you'd be willing to partner and collaborate.
That's fascinating. I love it. What would you say is your favorite moment, if there is one, that you've ever had as an athletic trainer, whether it be student to now in an administrative role? What would you say, whether it be personal accomplishment, whether it be stupid, funny thing that happened, or what would you say is maybe one of the things that you just is memorable to you?
There's so many.
Sure. This is the hardest question for the people I've asked.
It probably is hardest question.
It is.
I'd say there are two moments from when I was a student at the University of Delaware that really stand out. One being just the opportunity to travel by myself as a senior to Japan with our men's basketball team.
Cool.
That was back when students could travel by themselves, and here I am
not
halfway
only
across the
here,
world.
But yeah, they send you.
No cell phones.
Yep.
We had a calling card, but, you know, the calling card only had $10 on it.
That's right, and you can't do that to Japan.
But, you know, I took my Arnheim book with me.
That's
That was what I had in my backpack, so if anything happened,
you could always go back to the Bible.
Or they didn't play.
The athletic training Bible, that's right.
We deal with it when we got back to Japan. So that was a favorite moment. My other moment was actually probably when I was a junior in college. One of my classmates worked for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he took me up to the Philadelphia Eagles during mini camp Got to meet Otho Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Jerome Pitts, one of the one of that fearsome Eagles defensive line, came into the athletic trainer.
Roughly, when was that year? Roughly.
Ooh, that was probably 91.
Okay.
91 and
92. I'm trying to think if it was late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, but basically Jerome Pitts came into the Michael Pitts came into the athletic training room and saw me standing there and asked, could I tape?
Mm-hmm.
And Otho Davis looked at me and said, yeah, if you can tape, go ahead and tape them. And I did. Nervous, but did a great job with it. And he walked back in the locker room and said, hey, they got a new guy in here.
Hey, the kid can do all right,
So then Reggie White came in. Then Jerome Brown came in. Then Harold Carmichael came in. Mike Quick, Randall Cunningham, Andre Waters.
The big hitters
All of them came in, and I just stood there on the taping table.
Knocking them out.
taping Hall of Famers, basically, and, got to tape Reggie White, which was pretty cool. And, then fast forward full circle, when I was at the University of Central Florida, we had a running back named D. Brown, who was actually Jerome Brown's son, who was my athlete for 3 years there. So that was pretty cool.
That's how it kind of came full circle.
Kind of connected.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, hey, kid, your feet are way smellier than your father.
Yeah.
How would you say? So when did you graduate from Buffalo?
University of Delaware. I graduated in 1993.
Sorry. 93. Okay. So in that many years, how would you say the profession has changed?
Would
it be good or bad? I mean,
I think the profession has got a lot more professional.
Okay.
Used to come to the NATA and there were shorts.
I promise. I was just about to say that. I have seen less flip flops at this 2017 Houston than I've ever seen. But go ahead, sorry.
You went from shorts and t-shirts for the athletic trainers to typical athletic trainer wear, khakis and a polo to, I'm pretty much consider myself underdressed today.
Sure.
Tomorrow I'll have on a sport coat. Yep. And now most people wear sport coats and ties here. So I think it's gotten more professional. I also think it's gotten more evidence-based.
Sure.
And also by more professional, I think we've widened our scope of what we do and our expertise, which has really made us, at least in the college and traditional setting, the experts of anything and everything, healthcare, and we're so diverse now, we're so skilled now in a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Students are coming out of school now more skilled and more knowledgeable than ever.
I agree.
They're lacking a little bit in the practical experience, but they're more knowledgeable, and I think it's our job just to get them that practical experience
that
and mold them into just the good professional.
Agreed. I'll say this. The opportunity I had at Maryland, when I was fortunate to work with you is, I'd graduated, and then I went to graduate school, but really you absolutely technically my position was considered. An intern position, but on my business card it said assistant athletic trainer, and you 100% expected us to be treated just like whether to your coaches. You always had our back. I had Terry Rupp was sorry, I could cry laughing thinking some Terry Rupp stories, but you absolutely had my back on a few occasions, and I came to you with some situations with some kids that I felt like needed to sit out or do this or that. And I guess Dr. Dreese, I believe, would say, hey, this kid's sitting out. And to a point, I'm like, hey, how do I handle this guy? And if anybody knows Coach Rupp, who's now at, I think he's back down to athletic director at Tampa, I think now, he was a tough coach. But once you stand up to him, and your advice, and whether you do not know if you would ever remember this, I asked your advice, how do I handle this? And honest to God, I wanted you to go and talk to him for me. And there was absolutely no chance that was going to happen. It was more like, and I talked to Sean Hendy, and Sean's like, well, Jared, you got to handle your own. I'm like, that's not the answer I want. Let's go to DC. And you were like, and you made the comment. You're like, it's your job. And that this may be where, I'm now a sales guy. You have to sell the coach on your ability. But at the same time, if a coach is questioning you, then maybe you need to give them more information. And it kind of, it stressed the need for for me to be able to understand, you know, on a larger level exactly the reasoning why. And going back to the whole tactile, you know, we have the knowledge, but maybe not the practical part. You know, sometimes it's good to be thrown into the fire, you know, for lack of a better term. But in the end, I always knew you had our back. And there was a time when, you know, I'd say something and you went to coach and, you know, hey, no, what he said is right. And this is what we're doing. And you always had my back. And for what it's worth, I appreciated that.
Yeah, you know, my philosophy is I'm going to give you all the rope you can handle, but I'm not going to let you hang yourself.
Right. And, no, that's right.
You know, it's all about communication.
Yep.
I believe in communicating and communicating as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you didn't realize was that both Hendy and I had talked to Rupp on the side. And,
okay.
You know, already either before you had talked to him or after you had talked to him, had said, yeah, Jared's making the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Even though
I didn't know it,
doubts,
you still had, yeah.
We had your back. We were going to back you up and say you were making the right decision. This is what it was.
Sure.
You know, we had talked to the doctor. We had looked at your notes.
Yeah.
You know, this was the right decision.
Yeah.
And so that gave him some relief after you had talked
to
him.
It's not just some schmuck from Louisiana,
but, you know,
or whatever.
You needed to go talk to him because that's, you know, the relationship with the coach and the athletic trainer is the most precious relationship in sports, and that,
yep,
that communication has to be there.
Cannot agree. And, you know, it even got to the point where, I mean, he and I had a pretty heated conversation about a pitcher one time, and actually a kid who's currently in the league still. And in the end, it was absolutely the right decision. And after that, you know, kind of closed door, we're going to have a conversation. It's amazing how much respect he ended up having for me after that. And I think it was more, you know, it may have been that he was kind of trying to push me to see how far he could take me.
Definitely.
But at the same time, I think it was also, am I really just some schmuck, or, you know, can I hold my own? And I think once he realized that, I mean, I can honestly say in the first month or so, Coach Rupp was like, oh my God, this is that coach you hear about. But, he's one of my favorite coaches ever in hindsight. You know, this is kind of a guy I really enjoyed, you know, but, what would you say, who would you say are some of your memorable coaches you've worked with? You've certainly worked at so many different levels.
Unfortunately, that means that a lot of my teams haven't won a lot when you work with
a lot
of coaches.
That's right. True.
You know, I think right off the bat, Coach Harbaugh,
yeah,
you know, even though I don't work with him directly day by day,
sure,
he's incredible.
Yeah,
he cares about the athletes so much. He wants them to make the right choices in life and in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a knowledgeable person about the game and in life that,
sure,
he's just a great coach to work with.
Yeah.
And Michigan has a lot of great coaches. Coach Beilein, our basketball coach. Coach Hutchinson, our softball coach, winning his coach in Michigan history.
Okay, yeah.
Winning the softball coach in the history of the game.
Just, yeah.
You know, and the one thing I've learned about them is just the culture that they build,
yeah,
and the leadership that they build with their athletes.
Yeah.
Coach Friedgen at Maryland, brilliant guy.
Sure.
Taught me so much about the game.
Yeah.
So much about, you know, how injuries happened and his ability to go up on a Sunday, and if you had a Z receiver on the left side of the field,
mm-hmm,
that sprained his ankle or got a concussion, and his ability to relate that injury to the X receiver on the other side of the field or the right tackle,
yeah,
because they didn't do their job
mm-hmm,
that caused that person's injury, because if they would have done their job, then that
this
person, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Just when you kind of see it like that full circle,
yeah,
you know, Tubby Raymond at the University of Delaware was a great coach to work with. Pete Carroll at,
mm-hmm,
the Jets,
yeah,
great coach. Mike Kruzik and George O'Leary at University of Central Florida.
Yeah.
All just incredible people in their own right, taught me so much.
Yeah.
Taught me, you know, how to communicate. You know, I don't think there's ever been a coach that I've really ever had a horrible relationship,
sure,
with, just because of everything that everybody's taught me about talking with coaches, what they want to know.
Yeah.
You know, not giving in to coaches, but doing the things that, you know, are gonna make them trust you. And,
yep.
And
you know, I think there's some
understand.
Of those. There's some of those athletic trainers that, and this is a criticism, but it's also constructive criticism, that, well, no coach because I said so, and depending on what level you're at, or maybe not just level, but depending on what coach you're working with, that can absolutely not be an acceptable answer, because I said so, and you say that to the $5 million coach, that's not exactly going to fly. Now it may be, you know, cut and dry, and that's the way it's going to be. But at the same time, you have to be able to have some. That's where the, you know, evidence-based, whatever evidence-based practice or whatever you want to do, whatever you need to do, you're important that you have to be able to back up with reasons that, and you know, and it's not always just, well, look, coach, because I said so, and that's period. But you know, what I really learned from going from, you know, working from some high school football with that, you know, back in Mississippi versus, you know, working at Florida Atlantic in Maryland, and I learned that that the more you communicate with your, and I don't just mean injury wise, but if you can get to know your coaching staff and they get to know you and your personality, I think it's just going to make that relationship even better versus you being the guy that's the no guy.
Yeah, I mean, you have to communicate, and you know, because I said so is only works if you're a parent,
you know, exactly,
and up to a certain,
and even
age
that you know. What are you learning with your 14-year-old?
Yeah, but you have to communicate. You have to over communicate, pre communicate.
Sure,
you know, it's all, you know, you have to set things up.
Sure,
you know, so many of these arguments with coaches are because, you know, there hasn't been adequate communication and it hasn't been set up. The coaches relating back to a time that you're wrong. You're going to be wrong.
Sure.
You're going to say that kid, there's no way this kid's going to play this week, and the kid's going to surprise you and play.
Right.
You know, and you're going to be wrong, but you have to be humble about it.
Right.
You have to, you know, root your decisions in what's best for the kid and the evidence that's available
sure.
to you at the time you're making the decision, but be able to reevaluate.
Yep.
Not just say, I'm going to reevaluate tomorrow morning when the kid comes in, but literally reevaluate everything you're doing every single second
you're
of
reporting.
The day. And if you learn new facts, then you need
sure.
to act on those facts.
You know, I think in the end, you know, when it comes down to injuries and athletes and all, I mean, first off, I have a Rolodex of people. When I have a lower back injury for a pitcher that maybe, you know, I've never seen before, I've got that guy that I call. And that's that guy that he's the baseball guy or he's the bat guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even learning and what I was kind of hinting at earlier was one of the things I've really learned is not just saying no coach, he can't practice, but no coach, he can't do this activity.
Exactly.
So you got your quarterback that's got the, you know, subacromial bursitis. So maybe he shouldn't be throwing. But you know what? He's going to get a heck of a lot of handoffs going on in practice. And if you can
offer shuffle passes.
That's right.
He can at least stand behind the real quarterback when the quarterback's given the audibles or
given
the hand signals, then move out of the way.
Or you know what? Or you know, you got your quarterback who's now, you know, going to be making the reads just like any other time. And you know, his, you know, it's, but when you have a coach that, if you need to not just know your athletes, also that's the importance of like a guy like Friesian, where you learn things about offense that you would just never know. I mean, why would you ever know some of this
yeah.
stuff? Like, you don't know who the Z receiver is. I did not know there was a Z receiver until I got to Florida Atlantic. When Howard Schnellenberger, old Schnelly, who was at FAU, he made this comment, like, what is this guy? And you realize, okay, he's not just some old man who has been a coach, you know, since Moses played. You know, he walked on at wherever he was working back in the day at Miami or whatnot. But in reality, he's, you know, he's a guy, and there's a reason why he, you know, got to where he is, like a guy like Harbaugh and a guy like Friesian, and God knows how much they've learned. But if you can address a coach in a way that they understand and in their language, I think I learned that more than, you know, as I, you know, progress my profession, being able to have that educated conversation with your coach, I think it's a communication, but it's also elevating your communication. What would you say, who would you say made the greatest impact on your career? It could be a coach, it could be an athletic trainer, it could be an athlete, but...
Well, that's another tough one.
I know, yeah.
There have been so many people. You know, I would say my mentor, Tony Decker, from University of Delaware. I'll say Mike King, Coach King from the University of Delaware, even though, and this is a great story for another time, but, you know, I was actually his senior athletic training
student.
Uh-huh. He was a first year in the program. I was a senior.
Okay.
So he kind of looked up to me from the mentor. Now, the backstory is he was at the time that that I was a senior and he was a first year in the program, he was also 62 years old.
Oh, well, okay.
And it had 7 different degrees and it retired as a major colonel in the Air Force.
Really?
And
awesome.
He was just going back to school.
So yeah.
You know, yes, I had 2 years on him from athletic training, but he had 60 years on me from life.
In life.
So he made this incredible difference.
Now, what did he do after? Did he graduate?
He graduated. He's still athletic trainer.
Okay.
To the state. He lives in Dover, Delaware. Works at a clinic. Worked University of Delaware basketball for a long time.
Love it.
Well-read, incredible mind and man.
I could imagine.
Ronnie Lott. You know, I had the opportunity to work with him for 3 years at the New York Jets.
Okay.
Just what he taught me of how, from a work ethic standpoint, from a dedication standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, and just how athletes think.
Sure.
You know, he's taught me probably about as much about a concussion evaluation as anybody of, you know, where to position yourself, how to talk to an athlete, how to get an athlete to do what you need them to do.
What are you listening for? What are you watching for?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You know, he told me all his tricks of the trade, but this is a NFL Hall of Famer, one of the 75th greatest players to ever play the game of football, the greatest safety in the game of football.
Living legend.
Yeah, definitely a living legend. Then I've had some great mentors outside of athletic training. You know, I worked for 7 years as an EMT and a tactical EMT. So living in the SWAT world, being a SWAT medic.
Did you do that where?
When I was at the University of Maryland.
Okay.
For 7 years when I was at the University
of Maryland. So I remember we did. I was wondering how you had such a great relationship with those guys when they brought the helicopter in and we would practice spine boarding. And the whole, you know, we had a kid when I was there, Donnie
Woods.
I still talk to him on Facebook.
Yeah.
Donnie had who's a big boy. He ain't a little guy.
No.
He was a big old boy. But we, you know, we had practiced spine boarding at the beginning of the year, and then we re-practiced, and we did it now only one time with the helicopter. We couldn't exactly have them just pop over. I guess you probably had the connection.
You probably could have
done it. But Donnie goes down. What are we playing? Florida State. This is a big game, night game. And, you know, I'd boarded some people before in the past. But I'll tell you what, from start to finish, it was so well coordinated. And I really attribute that to the communication, not just internally with our staff, but the communication that you guys had set up external with the helicopter crew and the EMS. And the administration getting to the, you know, making sure you grab the parents from the stands and facilitating. I mean, I remember ended up making a drive to, but shock trauma, I guess, later to go pick them up.
Yep.
You know, pick the parents up.
That picture leads off my
your presentation.
You and Dr. Rooks walking back. Donnie. No, that's the key. Again, it's preparation, it's education, it's communication.
Yeah.
It helped that I was an EMT.
Yep.
It helped that. I was in that network, and it met a lot of the medevac
crew
medics. Still great friends with them. I'm actually presenting with one of them on Thursday out here. So all that coordination helped. But just living in that EMS world, living in that SWAT world, you understand what teamwork is.
Yeah.
And you understand more what teamwork is more than what you ever understand working with a football team.
Right.
Because, you know, it's one thing if the left tackle doesn't do his job, the quarterback probably gets sacked.
Right.
Quarterback may wind up with a concussion.
But right.
Probably he's just going to get sacked.
Right.
And you're going to get up and you're going to play the next down. Whereas, you know, if you're the EMS and you're going on a run with your fire department and you're going to first do house fire and – if you aren't working as a team, somebody's going to get burned.
Yep.
If you're, you know, my role as a SWAT medic, I wasn't armed. I could shoot all the guns. I qualified with all the guns, but I didn't carry a gun.
Sure.
So, you know, you're going into a house with a known gang member who's going to shoot at police, has guns in the house. You know, I'm one of 10 people in the line, but I'm the only one that doesn't have a gun.
Right.
I have to
you
rely
gotta trust
on... And trust, and trust the training, trust the preparation, trust the execution that the other 9 people who can shoot really well, have really big guns and a lot of guns.
They're real good at it.
That they're going to, if something pops up, they're going to take care of the threat and protect me. But they're also trusting me that if something doesn't go right, whether or not they just step in the hole and sprain their ankle or they get shot, that I'm on my game and I know where all my supplies are and I've prepared and I'm going to save their life.
Yep.
So.
Do you know
that's
what
the essence of teamwork?
You know that I knew that you did a lot of stuff with that, but I didn't know that you actually were a medic with those. When was it? Every year you're at Maryland?
Yeah, for the from 96 to 2013.
Well,
worked with Laurel Police Department, Greenbelt Police Department, and the Maryland State Police.
Well, I remember you coming and showing a video from the helicopter, like looking down, and I was like, that's cool, but like, how did that happen? You know, I didn't.
Just the relationship with the Maryland State Police, and still great friends. He's one of my best friends today, and the ability to, they would let me fly along with them, ride along with them, and I probably flew in the helicopters. Probably gone on 9 different ride-alongs with them.
Yep.
I've spent over 200 hours in shock trauma doing this ride-alongs in shock trauma. So it's just fun. It's an adrenaline rush. It's amazing what those guys can do. I have the utmost respect.
No question.
In the middle of the night, you know, flying around in a bumpy helicopter, taking turns.
God knows what kind of weather.
And you're putting IVs in and saving lives.
Sure.
And, you know, veins that just don't exist.
Yep.
And you're just that good at your skill to be able to do that in the middle of the night.
Yep.
You know, and there are people who can't do an IV in a greatly lit
operating
room. Yep. On, you know, that's the utmost respect. That's why I involved them in our program. They used to travel with us to hot weather games because, you know, it's not that hard to put an IV in an athlete because their veins are usually straws.
Right.
But, you know.
But, hey.
You get your difficult ones every once in a while.
And you're glad you got that person.
If you can put in a 90-year-old car accident victim in the middle of the night flying through the air, you know, when they have
no veins. You can
put
it on a 20-year-old super stud here. What would you we'll wrap up with this. What words of advice would you give to students or young professionals that are getting to the athletic training profession? What's that nugget, the Conway nugget?
I would probably, 2 things that come to mind that I always talk about. If it's predictable, it's manageable.
Uh-huh.
So if you can predict something that's going to happen, you should be able to manage
it. Do you have that on a bumper sticker yet?
Or no, I don't have it on a bumper sticker. But it's in all my presentations. If it's predictable, it's manageable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we should be able to predict that a shortstop, a third baseman, and a left fielder could collide going for a fly ball and all 3 be unconscious and not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Predictable thing. We should be able to manage it.
Right.
Whether or not you're 1 athletic trainer working there at, you know, Johnny High School game, or you're working the College World Series tonight with all the resources in the world, you should be able to manage that.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I use all the time is in times of stress, you're going to fall to the level of your training, not rise to the level of your expectations. So, you know, if you don't train, if you don't prepare, and if you don't train in a stressful manner, you know, when it comes time to perform, you know, you're gonna basically fall to the level of your training. So if you've never, in all your CPR certifications, if you've never really gotten air into that mannequin.
Yeah, you're not.
But you know that you have to breathe every 30 compressions. But when you go to breathe, you've either never practiced it or never gotten air into the mannequin. What makes you think you're going to do that when a kid's lying out on the field unconscious
and you're breaking
breathing.
Ribs doing compressions but not getting air into it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, this in times of stress, we have to practice in a stressful manner.
Yeah, I get it.
To be successful.
Well, this is off the cursor. One of my fondest memories of Darren, this might be embarrassing, maybe not. We would go down to, was it Potbelly's? Was that a little place in College Park? No, what was a little sandwich shop?
It was that the little white tab.
Roly Poly's or something.
Yeah.
Gosh, I forgot the name of it. There was a day that we were looking for you. I think it was Tiffany Burby and myself and Rosalia Acap.
Yep.
And Shelby Hoppus. We were looking for you and we couldn't find you. And you roll up on your rollerblades. And I'm trying to figure out, and you look, I mean, you were rocking in rollerblades. Do you still rollerblade around Ann Arbor?
No, I do not rollerblade. I haven't rollerbladed since, since I was at Maryland. Matt Sharvett, our women's basketball athlete trainer, he used to run half marathons.
That's right.
And marathons.
And that's how you would keep.
And I would go rollerblading with him to keep him company, I'd rollerblade out like a mile in front of them, then kind of turn around and roll way back to them to check.
For what it's worth, I will never forget, and I don't know if you had the full, and I hope you did, but you probably didn't have the knee pads and the elbow pads and the wrist pads and the helmet.
I always wear wrist pads. Always wear wrist pads because I never wanted to break my wrist.
For what it's
elbow
worth,
pads.
I don't care how big in this profession you ever get, I will always remember Daryl Conway riding in rollerblades with the wrist pad. That's really, you know. But look, for what it's worth, I greatly appreciate everything you've ever done for me, and for the profession, and just thank you for what you're doing for everyone who's ever worked with you. I can assure you.
No problem. Thank you.
For sure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
See ya. Yes, sir.